Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yo, yo, what's up? Chris Sims here. Chris Sims Unbuttoned Podcast. Got my man Ahmed Farid over there, the nicest at-home set on all of TV. I mean, it is good. Man, you are some professional. But what's up, everybody? Hope everybody's good out there. We got a lot to hit on today on the podcast. As you know, we got the quarterback rankings. Most importantly, that's what we're going to be talking about. But as anybody who is not living off the planet Earth right now, or if as long as you're not living under a rock, there's some other subjects that, of course, have hit the NFL airwaves here. We're gonna dive into that a little bit here in a second.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, we do have, you know, what is it, 26 through 23. Your dad's coming on here. Your quarterback rankings move on. But yeah, let's start with the topic that really dominated your show with Mike the other day. You spent the entire 2 hours on it. Drew Brees, his interview with Yahoo Finance, said that, quote, "I will never agree with anyone disrespecting the flag of the United States of America." Several people came out against Drew Brees, including his teammate Malcolm Jenkins, who said, quote, "those comments were extremely self-centered." And then the next day, Drew Brees came out with an apology that I'm sure a lot of people out there have already seen, trying to bridge the gap. And he said, here's part of it, Chris. Quote, "in an attempt to talk about respect, unity, and solidarity centered around the American flag and the national anthem, I made comments that were insensitive and completely missed the mark on the issue we are facing right now as a country." I did a podcast with Jack Collinsworth and Corey Robinson called All Things Social Activism the other day. That's on our YouTube page. You can certainly check that out. Chris, I know you talked for hours with Mike about this live on TV on NBCSN the other day as well. So we've talked on this subject quite a bit already, but what would you just like to add here at the top of this podcast?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do want to add something, but yeah, I just want to let the fans know, listen, if you're expecting me and Ahmed to sit here for the next hour and just talk about Drew Brees and the race conversation, no, that's not going to happen. You know, like Ahmed said, we discussed this for 2 hours straight, the same topic, me and Mike Florio. So anyone out there that wants to see those type of videos, go to profootballtalk.com, go to Mike Florio's PFTPM podcast. All these clips are all out there. But nonetheless, we can't avoid the subject. It's the number one subject in our country. It's the number one subject in our sport. And it hits home. And listen, as a white American, there's moments right now where I'm ashamed to call myself a white American, by the way some are acting. Now, Drew Brees, I have a lot of respect for in a lot of ways. But I found these comments, of course, to be totally tone deaf and disrespectful. I was hurt when I first heard it. I mean, if you saw what I was doing on the front lawn of my house when I first saw these comments and what I was saying to my wife, yeah, I got revved up. I just could not believe it. And as you know, and I, you know, we both have friends that are African-American, and I've been around a lot. Hey, social injustice is real. It's a real issue in our country. And yes, I thought Drew Brees was tone deaf to bring it kind of back to himself in a self-righteous way in a moment where, man, the whole country is going through some stuff right now. And to bring it back to himself in a way where he uses the talking points that really what white racist America wants to use to get away from talking about the subject or dealing with racism in our country. Hey, yeah, I was bothered by that. I was. It's not about disrespect for the flag. It's not about disrespect for the military. In fact, if we didn't spend so much time on that subject, maybe we wouldn't be where we are today. And we would just have acknowledged Colin Kaepernick was kneeling because there is a bigger issue out there. So I think that, and then, you know, the fact that, hey, listen, Drew Brees spent more time on talking about guys kneeling for the anthem and never really addressed that a guy kneeled on a guy's neck for 9 minutes. So that's where it was insensitive. I got revved up. I can't even imagine what a black person or African-American is going through in this time, and certainly can't imagine how they felt after those comments. But, you know, as we're seeing, again, and I don't want to – Drew Brees, I know, is a good guy. He's done a lot of good, but he's just off the mark on this subject. There's no other way to put it, hopefully he can grow from it and learn from his mistake and learn that he's hurting people and putting out propaganda for the wrong side in this fight.
You said a lot of the things that I was thinking. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking out there as well. Do I think that Drew Brees is a racist? No. Do I think that he's for police brutality? No. Do I think that he thinks all people should have a fair shot out there and be treated equally? Yes, I do think that. Like you mentioned, Drew Brees is a good guy. I don't think there's evil to his core, but I think what his problem was is that he was oblivious. Like you said, oblivious to the bigger fight out there, because it's always been, and I was in San Francisco when Colin Kaepernick was kneeling, so I was right there in the middle of it all. It's always been two separate conversations that have been happening at the same time. And people think it's one conversation, but it really is not, because there is a conversation outside of the black community and what has happened with systemic racism, with the way that people like the flag to be protested, if you like it at all. And I'm sure if Colin Kaepernick was, you know, spitting on the flag and double birding during the protest, there would be people that say, okay, that crossed a line. Well, if that's the case, then we do have to be respectful that some people do believe that taking a knee perhaps crossed the line as well. But that's a totally separate conversation. And in the grand scheme of things, there's a whole lot less at stake with that conversation. Because if someone protests the flag or does a protest using the flag in a way that you don't like, it may hurt your feelings. It may make you feel uncomfortable. But that's the extent of it. And I think that's what Drew Brees missed here, is that there's such a larger conversation going on with much higher stakes for the black community, for people's lives right now. And that's the conversation that everyone is having that, unfortunately, Drew Brees in that moment was not having.
No, not the right effect, not the right choice of words. And, you know, listen, I think he was kind of trying to straddle the line and have it both ways. He was trying to appeal to that, you know, white America who's trying to still act like racism's not a real thing in this country. But yet he was trying to somehow show some sensitivity towards black America. But obviously, you know, this is not a subject you can straddle the line on. It's not. I'm sorry. There's issues in our country with this subject, you know, and I know even I growing up as a kid, a dad had an NFL quarterback, and I was around black people growing up and, of course, played sports and everything like that. Hey, I thought I had a good feel for some of the racial oppression that goes on in this country. And I can honestly sit here and say that I didn't, even though I was around a lot of black people growing up. Until you start to get a little older, and I go home with guys in college and go to their hometowns, or, you know, in my early days in the NFL, and you're out with black players, and you start to see how cops and sometimes how even the general public can treat African Americans in our country, you'll start to realize, whoa, this is an issue. Like, there are some people with some really fucked up thoughts out there and that are backwards in their thinking. And that's why the conversation's important. And that's why Malcolm Jenkins and everybody couldn't let this slide under the table, because these are the guys that are at the forefront fighting this fight. And they couldn't let their, you know, white quarterback who's awesome and throws touchdowns and wins games get away with it just because he's that guy. So, I want to reaffirm that point. I don't want to sit here and tell you that Drew Brees is a bad person. I just think he's off base on this subject. And I think he's been a little insensitive, and some learning and some growing to do. And I think he will do that, because I think he's a smart enough guy to realize that he was at fault, as we've seen with the comment. The big thing I need from Drew Brees right now, because this is going to be an issue for the Saints, is I do think Drew Brees needs to get on TV and start talking. You got to start having a face with these words. You can't just release a statement. If you want to mend the locker room needs to genuinely see it in your eyes that you are – you know, saddened by your comments, that you were mistaken with your information. And, you know, I think that's the big thing. That really is. And, you know, I know, listen, I'm all about respecting the military, respecting the flag. I get it, you know, but I'd like to think one of my grandfathers fought in World War II. I'd like to think he was fighting for our freedom as a country. And I'd like to think if he was still alive, he'd be a little disappointed where we are as a country right now, realizing that not everybody is really free. So, you know, again, I think that's where he was a little bit off base in that message too, let alone Malcolm Jenkins letting him know that he had some grandfathers that fought in World War II, along with a lot of other African-Americans in our country. And, you know, they basically came back to America after that war and then just got shit on again and were treated like, hey, you're lesser than us. You're Black America. You're not really in our class. And that is wrong. And it bothers me, as you can tell right now. And I'm exhausted of talking the subject. And hopefully we can talk about some football now.
Yeah, empathy. That is a word that I think we've heard from everyone out there. Have some empathy for people that maybe don't look like you or have had different experiences than you. And so, you know, we need more empathy. And I would encourage people that to have empathy for people who say the wrong thing at the wrong time, you know. And I think that's what in your comments, too, this is a misstep. And hopefully Drew Brees can learn from that. But let's be empathetic also to some people that make a mistake in this time. And do some genuine learning and come around to seeing the bigger picture out there, which hopefully Drew Brees does. As I said, yeah. We talked for 2 hours with Mike, and so you can check out those videos on online on YouTube as well. All right, Chris.
And one last thing, one last thing, I just want to say about it too, just because I just want to, and I, you know, again, I know we got another 2 minutes before Big Phil calls, but you know, I really, there's three instances in my life that hit home with me hard to really realize it. I think I might have told you this before, but I'm going to tell it again. I don't care because I think it's right. I got pulled over in Texas once with four Black teammates in my car. The police officer told me to get out of the car. He brought me behind the car and he asked me if I was being held against my will. And I was like, I don't even understand the question. I'm an 18-year-old kid that's like, what? I don't get it. You know, he's like, wait, have these Black men, are they forcing you to do something you don't want to do? And I was like, no, these are my friends. These are my teammates. So that was number one. Okay. That was the first one. Then I get to become a rookie in the NFL. I have one of my Texas teammates up in New Jersey visiting me and my family right there. I let one of my teammates borrow my car and he went to the shopping mall. He was driving around the shopping mall in a nice car and a cop pulled him over for no reason. And then didn't believe him, of course, that he was borrowing my car. He made my friend call me to say, to verify that I had lent him the car to go shopping, okay? And then my last thing that I will say again is, I'm going into a club in Tampa, Florida once, sitting in line, and we're there, and I got a friend next to me wearing some, you know, like nice Air Jordans and a buttoned-up shirt, and he looks good. Well, I see in front of me, they've let a few white guys in with some really shitty Vans on, right? And some shorts, and they're dressed like shit. Now, all of a sudden, it comes time for my Black friend to come up and we're gonna get in the club. And sneakers aren't allowed in this club. Sneakers aren't allowed. Now, the shitty Vans that are also sneakers, they were allowed on the white guys. So that really hit home to me. And that's what took my awareness of this subject to a new level. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry I interrupted you, and let's get to football. No.
And I think that, you know, you hear the term white privilege out there, and I think there are some people that take offense to that because they think, well, my life hasn't been all that easy. It's been hard even as a white person. And I think I saw it somewhere here recently, Chris, that, you know, white privilege doesn't mean you have to feel guilty for being white. It doesn't mean that your life has been easy. It just means that the color of your skin didn't make it harder. And so I think, as you just illustrated so well right there, is that there were many times where, you know, people's lives are not easy, but the color of their skin made their lives harder. And that's what a lot of people are trying to get us to see.
Well,
like
said.
I said, we talked about this with All Things. So check that out. Chris's podcast with Mike is very passionate about the subject as well. All right. We've got Big Phil calling in just a second here. Chris, let's take a look at where we are so far in your top 40 quarterback countdown as we make the hard right turn to talk about some football here in your rankings. So there we have Andy Dalton was the last one you ranked, 27. We're going to go through 26 all the way to 23. So we got four more to highlight here. And Chris, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, But there's a Twitter follower out there, HAH. So obviously we're keeping track of your current list. HAH has been keeping track of the list from last year and comparing it to this year. He is taking notes as you go.
That's my man right there, HAH. Yes, I was aware of this. And hey, listen, this is why I'm in the business. You know, I'm hoping we can continue to provide a culture of good football conversation. And I want psychos like HAH to be psycho along with me about this board and dive into the nuances, get into the weeds with me. You know, let's get knee deep in this crap and really dissect. So HAH, you my man. Thanks. I appreciate the support. And, you know, like I always say with this, I know I'm not perfect. I work hard at it. I'm passionate about it. And I think that the history of my rankings is, it's pretty good. They speak for themselves, let alone my experiences, not only playing, who I was coached with, catching passes from my father. I've caught passes from Brett Favre and Dan Marino and Vinny Testaverde and Tom Brady and all those people. So I've had a pretty good firsthand look at a lot of damn good quarterbacks, and that's got to count for something. I'm not a total idiot is what I'm saying.
Not a total idiot. No one ever argued you were a total idiot. Just the percentage is what we argue about from time to time. Let's get some reaction from the homies out there. We got two. This one's about Andy Dalton, who you had at 27th. Jennifer Asman says, if only Cincinnati had a confident quarterback who could occasionally deliver in the clutch. Not only were the teams Dalton ruined good enough to consistently belong in the playoffs, they were Super Bowl caliber. So she thinks the postseason troubles were all on the shoulders of one Andy Dalton.
No, well, that's not fair. That's not. Now, listen, I'm not going to sit here and try to lie and tell you that I think Andy Dalton's the clutchest quarterback I've ever seen. I think that there was a weakness to him. I do think it's that a little bit. Yes, that he didn't always deliver in clutch moments. But, you know, I think you got to give Andy Dalton credit for one, not the greatest culture there in Cincinnati, as we've seen pretty much our whole lifetime, Ahmed. And two, you know, still 5 straight playoff appearances, okay, in the AFC North, in the time when Baltimore and Pittsburgh were like kind of the real deal. You can say what you want. The guy did a lot of good. You know, does it blow me away? And am I like, oh my gosh, he's amazing? No, but he's certainly a good quarterback. He's worthy of being a starter in the NFL. There's no doubt about that. And you can win games with Andy Dalton, as we've seen. So the problems in Cincinnati are much deeper than Andy Dalton. That's for sure.
Some questions about Gardner Minshew at 30. This one coming from Sarir Sulian. I hope I got that right. Only
probably
number
not.
30. When I didn't, there's no way. Only number 30 when he had virtually identical numbers to Kyler Murray. Not saying he's better than Murray, but 30 feels low, assuming these rankings are in a vacuum. And I will say, yeah, you're not looking at how well they did last year. You're picking these players based on who you would want going forward, correct?
Right, exactly right. And, you know, again, it, you know, anything you get, like I've told you, you know, this 25 through 40, it's close, this group of guys. Yes, I don't have Gardner Minshew on Kyler Murray's level of where he's going to be ranked. I'm going to tell you that right now. Kyler Murray ain't coming up on this show. I'm telling you, he ain't coming up in the next one either. So, all right, I like Gardner Minshew. I do. There's a difference, and I think I addressed this on the last podcast or a little, maybe it was two podcasts ago, but Kyler Murray, I don't care. See, this is where context matters when you compare stats. Arizona from day one was like, here you go, Kyler Murray, take over the team. Please carry us. This is your show. Do it. From day one, a lot more pressure on a quarterback to play that style of football compared to, hey, Gardner Minshew, we like what you're doing. We're going to protect you, and we're going to run the ball a lot and, you know, play defense and can try to control the clock, and we're going to manage the game a little bit, and then we can just hope you make some plays here and there just to help us out. And that's really, to me, ultimately what the difference is between the two guys, let alone I think Kyler Murray's far more talented. But what he was asked to do is a lot harder than what Gardner Minshew was asked to do, let alone, again, listen, you got to break down Gardner Minshew. The context matters in this type of stuff. He kind of feasted on the poor, and they played a style of football that was managing him to a degree. So, you know, that's different than Kyler Murray, where I look at it like a Peyton Manning, like the day one he walked in the door, they were like, okay, you're the organization. You're the face of the franchise. Carry us. Let's do it. And that's hard to do. And Kyler Murray was pretty damn smooth at it for a rookie.
Yeah, like Nick Foles last year when he was the guy, supposed to be the guy there in Jacksonville. Think of how different it is for him coming into Chicago, where everyone's like, yeah, he should take over. This guy's the guy. Get him in there. Where in Jacksonville, everyone's thinking, oh, this guy is not worth what we paid him. Context does matter.
Right. Right.
On the phone right now, we got Big Phil, and he's Big Phil, you're coming at a perfect time because we're about to reveal producer Pete's top five facial hair rankings for quarterbacks currently in the NFL. How happy are you?
Oh my God. Okay. what okay. Like, I'm an expert at this. I still can't grow a mustache or anything. I shave once a week, so I don't know much about facial hair.
Phil's like, I should have called in 5 minutes later. This is a mistake.
No, it's okay. It's all good. I want to hear it. I can jump in there. I have an opinion, of course.
All right.
So I guess number one, have you revealed any yet? Or we're going to do it now?
We have not. It's a top five. You're going to get to hear it live right here.
Because
this came from Pete Hanning, another one of our Twitter followers, who said,
okay,
Gardner Minshew may be 30 in Chris's list, but number one in mustache swagger. So we're going to find out right now. Producer Pete put together the top five list. And Chris, you and I know this very well. When we leave Pete in charge of stuff like this, often it gets a little messed up.
That's probably going to be a disaster.
With top hair of the decade, he had Eric Weddle as number one in top hair of the decade. And later on, he told me he meant to put him number 10, but didn't label which was which. And so it got all messed up. But that's neither here nor there at this point. We'll never bring that up again. So number five, honorable mention first for Pete, is Jimmy Garoppolo's stubble because it's so dreamy. So he's putting stubble in the category of facial hair.
Okay, first off, did he say dreamy?
He said dreamy, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Get him,
okay.
Dad, get him.
it's dreamy. I like that. That's a good way to say things. I will remember that. That's good.
So he has hands off.
Yeah, so he's honorable mention.
So okay, gotcha. Sorry.
As dreamy as he is, he's still not in the top five. Number five, he has Aaron Rodgers, and he clarifies that it's better in the off season, as we're seeing right here, when he goes mustache only and cowboy hat for Aaron Rodgers.
Oh my gosh! Oh, Dad, I wish you could see this picture right now with this huge, you know, mustache he's got, and he's dressed up like a cowboy. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers' facial hair. It's so horrible, it's good to me. And you know I love Aaron Rodgers. I'm like leader of the fan club. But I don't think he looks good with his facial hair. As good as it can grow out, and he really does look like he's like Wyatt Earp right there, and that, you know, he's like going to say, like, you fought the law, and the law won. That's, it seems like what he's about to say. It is pretty impressive how he can grow it out.
That's great.
Jalen
Go ahead, rattle them off. Keep it going.
Jalen Hurts comes in at number four. So, wow, hasn't even stepped foot on a football field, but he's got Jalen Hurts. He said best goatee in the league. He hasn't even played a game so far.
Wow, that's strong. I mean, is this all time or this is current? We're just doing current? Is that
quarterbacks.
Really? Okay, good. I just want to make sure.
Well, I guess I got to hear the rest of the list before I make a comment on it. But Jalen Hurts, the goat, whatever he's got there, I never looked at it. And all the games I watched him play, I went, man, that's really cool looking.
Yeah. You didn't even notice. You weren't inspecting his facial hair? What are you doing? You're not really scouting.
Oh, I know, I know. Yeah, well.
All right, keep going.
It goes legs, ass, facial hair. Those are the top three for Chris's quarterback rankings. Number three, Baker Mayfield. He says the mustache only or the goatee. He went with both last year. Pete does not like the creepy trench coat, though, so take off the trench coat, but the facial hair gives him number three. Number two.
No, I like it, though, and that trench coat is creepy. I agree with Pete.
Number two, Ryan Fitzpatrick. This is tough to argue with. Best
beard.
Oh, my
God.
Certainly the most substantial beard, Phil.
I have never seen a man in all of history grow facial hair faster than Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, it's like Chia Pet. He must put something on it, and it grows. I don't even know how he buckles his chin strap late in the year. I was going, you can't tell me that feels good trying to strap that beard on and everything with that helmet. But I can't wait to hear number one if there's one over Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I'm interested too.
Number one in Pete Demolimolimolitis top five current hair, facial hair power rankings for current quarterbacks in the NFL. That's the official title. Number one is Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew gets the number one with a little, what is that? That's a soul patch right below the the mustache.
Yep, that is
number one.
All right, I mean,
well,
listen,
that's interesting.
I get it.
Yeah, you know, Gardner made one of the best statements, probably about. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little feedback on my phone, but when he said, "Why do they love him in Jacksonville?" He goes, "I got just enough white trash in me to make people like me, or whatever."
Right.
And that mustache, or whatever he's got going on. I mean, the whole thing goes into it. And one thing I never said about him to you. One, Christopher, and Ahmed, I don't know if I've said this, but he does have that personality and everything that players will gravitate to. And the other thing is, he has a set of legs on him like a damn linebacker. I mean, his legs are humongous. And you kind of see that when he plays.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You do. And, you know, Dad, I brought that up in my quarterback rankings. You know, when I got to two players that were really close, you know, what you're talking about, what the guy adds in the locker room, what he brings on the field, leadership, fire, all those things. That's who I gave the tiebreaker to a lot of the times. You know, those emotions and charisma and ability to lead men, like you always told me, are certainly important at the quarterback position.
No question. Yeah. You know, going back to what you guys were talking with, I was listening to you before you brought me on. Kyler Murray and Gardner Minshew, you know, I would disagree to this point. Kyler Murray played in an offense that was easy to get in rhythm with, always throwing the football, tons of screens, tons of short throws, always there, and it just, you know, it tires out the defense, all that. And I've always kind of said, to be a game manager, if you want to put it that way, that's a tough way to play, because you're not going to be – it's not all about you and you getting in rhythm and getting a feel and you can afford to miss a few throws when your so-called game manager means less throws, being more careful, and it's third and eight. Come on, make the play for us. So I think there's a little more pressure on game managers than guys they put pressure on.
That's fair, Dad. You're right. You're right. I guess I was just trying to say more that Kyler Murray was asked to carry
be the
team from day one, and Gardner Minshew was asked to be just a piece of the pie. That's really what I was really
trying to
get into.
That I agree with. Okay. Gardner Minshew is, they're not going to build their team around him and focus just on him this year, even if he has a great year. But Kyler Murray, look, man, he was the show last year, and he'll even be more the show this year. It's just going to be their success, and I never say this, but their success will really depend whether it's 9-7, maybe 10, whatever those are, 6-10. It'll come down to Kyler Murray, how well he plays, and if he can make more throws down the field, which they started bringing into their offense late last year.
All right, Chris, to wrap up the hair segment, Pete wanted me to pepper you with one final question, just your instant gut reaction.
Yeah.
He asked you, Chris, if you needed to wear one for the rest of your life, what would you choose? Gardner Minshew's stash and shaggy hair or Ryan Fitzpatrick's beard with cleaner top?
Ooh.
You're a fan of the clean top, Chris.
I think I'd rather go with the Ryan Fitzpatrick look. I do. You know, first off, I'm the son of my father. if he's shaving once a week, I'm only shaving twice a week, okay? It's not much more than that. So it would be cool to feel that beard that Fitzpatrick has, all right? And, you know, with my dad and our Kentucky roots, I don't know, you put that mustache that Gardner Minshew has on, I mean, you want to see white trash, I'll show you what it looks like in a hurry. You give me that mustache.
Two good points that I had not thought of previously. All right, so Phil, there's a trivia question I want to ask you about, but I think I want to save that to the end when we say goodbye to you. Do you want to get into the countdown, the top 40 countdown here, Phil?
Let's do it.
Whatever you guys want to do. I'm here to serve. Right. You know, when my son calls, I always say yes. If I say no, he goes, really?
Yeah.
You can't come on? So
and
I
he
mean,
makes your
so,
life
yeah.
miserable from that point forward.
Let's get in the countdown. I can't wait.
All right. Number 26 on the Chris Sims Top 40 quarterback list is
Joe Burrow, quarterback, Cincinnati Bengals, the number one pick in the draft. And yes, I know for everybody out there, I know we haven't seen Joe Burrow play football in the NFL yet. Listen, I am very confident in saying he's going to be good. I don't know if he's going to be great or awesome. I'm not sure of that. But I think everything I studied coming out in the draft makes me believe that he's going to be great. It does. Now, he's got to go out and prove that on the field. I understand that. But at the same time, I saw enough in college to know the guy is going to come in and be able to run an NFL offense, make every throw you need to make. And more importantly, when you play in a bad team, usually you're under pressure as a quarterback. And to me, that was where, you know, Joe Burrow just was out of this world good at LSU. I mean, out of this world good. Dad and I have talked about this with Joe Burrow. It's amazing for the team that won the national championship and went 15-0, and he's the number one pick, how bad his pass protection was on a week-to-week basis and how it actually never came to really affect the football game, because he is amazing in the pocket, he is amazing at escaping danger, and he is amazing at making big throws when people are all around him and danger is in the pocket and he can still make a 20-yard strike throw down the field. So that's why I got Joe Burrow where he's at. And, Dad, what are your thoughts on him?
Well, you took it all. I think you said it right. He played pro football last year down at LSU. I say this all the time. Sometimes, you know, we judge people just on one loss records. I think sometimes it's better to be on a college football team that has to struggle at times. It's a little rough. You get to play what pro football is really all about. And Joe Burrow, and we talked about it during the offseason. When I watched his games, I was like, wow, their pass protection is not what you think. And I was shocked at how much he got sacked, got away from trouble, threw the ball with people around him, going to get smashed by a guy that's unblocked, and he turns and the other way to find somebody to throw the football to. And I think his downside is, if it all goes bad as an NFL quarterback in his career, he'll be a good, solid NFL quarterback at worst. And so,
right.
And you know what, too? New quarterback in Cincinnati. Just, it's bringing life to the team. I can do it when I read their articles. You can see that they're excited. And it's going to,
yes.
That will all filter into the coaches, the players. And I hope they give him a chance where we at least get to see, you know, what he can do. I don't want to see a Bengals team that goes 2-14. And
right.
He just—it's just the same show every week for the quarterback, where you have no chance.
It seems like, and they've surrounded him, and I think we've talked about it with us three previously, with the fact they've surrounded him with some pretty good receivers. You got AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, John Ross, Auden Tate there as well in Cincinnati. So there's some weapons for Joe Burrow. I'm curious, because both of you, and I've heard you talk about this extensively, the tool of the arm strength for a quarterback. And Chris, you admitted that he didn't have the strongest arm strength of any quarterback coming out, although it was the cleanest film that you said you'd ever seen, perhaps from a quarterback in college. Why is the lack of arm strength not as much of a concern for you, for Joe Burrow, than it might be for some other quarterbacks?
Yeah, sure. Well, all right. You know, there's the two things I want to hit on there. First off, you know, Dad said the floor for Joe Burrow, or like, he's going to be a real good NFL quarterback. The ceiling to me is like he could be Peyton Manning. I know I said that to you. Like, that's who he reminded me of, really, in a lot of ways. Now, I think it's some of those qualities that, yes, it's not ever going to be one of the top five arms in football. It's not. You know, it's going to be right around the middle of the pack as far as pure arm power is concerned. But his ability to throw, you know, from awkward feet positions, awkward arm angles, he's got great anticipation. He's got great touch. You know, he's a thrower and a passer, as Dad and I would talk about. You know, he can drive the ball, but it's just not going to be 100-mile-per-hour fastball. It's 95 or 96 miles per hour. So he can make every throw there to be had. Yes, but if there was a weakness to his game, it is his deep ball throwing. I think that was the thing I was the most underwhelmed by. But decision-making, ability to process information on the fly and why he's doing that, make the decision and make the accurate throw with chaos happening around him is as good as I've seen. And the last thing I want to hit on, when you talk about the support around him, that's where the Bears went wrong. That's where a lot of teams go wrong when they draft these quarterbacks high. You know, if you want your first pick of the draft investment to work, well, you better give them a support system to make it work. And at least Cincinnati seems like they're building an offensive line and trying to put some receivers around them to go, hey, we think this guy has something to him. And if we just give him a little talent, he's going to get this whole organization going in the right direction. And he's got an edge and charisma and everything about him, to me, just exudes like franchise type quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with just everything. And, that's a really, you brought up a great subject. Why draft a quarterback in the first round and really declare that this is the man? And, you know, your job, the coach's job, the general manager, everybody is on the line when you do that. He must succeed. So if you have an awful defense, don't worry about it. Protect the quarterback. Build around him. It just enforce it so much that slowly that will just materialize in helping the whole team. Don't be trying to go, well, we got five holes. Let's just do a little. No. Build one great unit. I've learned, and I learned from George Young and Christopher and Amadou, the New York Giants, we were loaded in whatever it would be, defensive lineman, offensive lineman. And if that guy was there in the first round, they just go, yep, we're taking him. Just get another big guy that can really play. And, you know, don't be trying to, who's the guy that sticks his fingers in all the holes in the wall? You know, don't try to be that guy. Especially when you're talking about a quarterback, make sure. Because you know why? If he plays well and the team doesn't do as good or as well as you want, you'll still survive as a coach as long as your quarterback gives everybody hope. So hope he gets that in Cincinnati. I really believe he will. They've done a pretty good job this year. And then they got to follow it up next year with just adding on to it.
So, Chris, real quick, what do you think the floor is for Joe Burrow as far as all-time Cincinnati Bengals quarterbacks? Because I was looking it up, and if you think he can be Peyton Manning, then you obviously think his ceiling is the best Bengals quarterback of all time. Yes. I was looking up on Pro Football Reference, the approximate value. They try to quantify the career value of some of these quarterbacks. At the top of the list was Ken Anderson, 4-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, 1981 MVP, still somehow not in the Hall of Fame. Number two was Boomer Esiason. Then it was Andy Dalton. Then Carson Palmer. Then Jeff Blake. Where do you think the floor is for Joe Burrow? Where's the floor? What's the worst case scenario, you think?
Yeah, it's a good discussion. It's a good question. And, you know, listen, Ken Anderson, Boomer Esiason, Phil Simms. Hey, those are three guys that are be at the top of my list. I'm sorry for guys that I think should be in the Hall of Fame that are not. All right. Along with Jim Plunkett, probably I'd put him in that conversation. But that's the thing I love about Joe Burrow. To me, like, the floor is a little bit like what Dad is. I look what Dad said. You know, I don't think it's ever going to be. I don't think it'll be as bad as Andy Dalton. Like, I don't think he'll be. I really think that's about the floor is what I'm saying. Andy Daltonville, maybe a little bit better. I don't think it's going to be much worse than that. Again, I just don't see many. I don't see any weaknesses to his football game. And then I don't see any weakness with his character, competitive nature, toughness, charisma, ability to lead, ability not to care about what maybe some people think about you and just do what you think is right. I mean, to me, all those things just scream success to me.
So 26 is Joe Burrow, the new franchise quarterback.
Go ahead,
Cincinnati.
Dad. What do you want to say?
No, I was just going to say, I really do think, you know, Kenny Anderson in Cincinnati, you know, not a big talker, nothing that you don't look and go, wow. But, man, he could stand in there. He was accurate as heck throwing the football, could throw it any kind of weather, and, you know, just gets overlooked. And just like Jim Plunkett, just like Dan Reeves, Dan Reeves, that coaching career, and I never even hear his name brought up about going to the Hall of Fame. And then Tom Flores, he won 2 Super Bowls. I thought that was the magic thing. Win 2 Super Bowls, well, you got to go to the Hall of Fame. His name's never brought up. So, you know, listen, there's a lot of people sitting out there since we've opened up the Hall of Fame. I know I'm not going to get off subject, But there's a group of people, since we've done what we've done and added people, that they need to do it again because it was too close. And there's other guys that I really just am adamant they need to be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Yep. Ken Anderson's been
ahead,
passed
Ahmed.
Over
Let's go.
30 times, I believe, that Ken Anderson has been passed over for the Hall of Fame. We're just going to turn this into a Phil Simms Hall of Fame advocacy podcast, though. We could do that.
Don't do that. I've already alienated so many people. It'll never happen. I'm not worried about it. So let's go ahead.
All right. So Joe Burrow's 26. 25, Chris.
25, Drew Locke, Denver Broncos. And, you know, hey, we're going to talk about some of these other guys that are just right in front of Drew Locke here in a second. But I'm not going to lie. Drew Locke really excites me as a football player. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, you know, I was a huge fan of him coming out in the draft. I thought he was the second best quarterback in the draft that year behind Kyler Murray. I really did. You know, he's got like a lot of things that I look at to go, ooh, the guy could be great. First off, he's just a really natural, pure thrower of the football. And the ball explodes out of his hands with great ease. And I don't care where he's at, whether he steps into it and lets it go, he can throw that 100 mile per hour fastball. But the other thing that's important that I find fascinating about the guy, too, is he can throw the 96-mile-per-hour fastball off his back foot, falling down backwards and doing stuff like that, too. You know, he reminds me of a Matthew Stafford as far as his skill set is concerned. You know, that's really who he is. And, again, I think the world of Matthew Stafford and his skill set. It's special. It's one of the greatest arms in the history of the sport. Drew Locke's arm is special. He is the kind of guy that I think we could be sitting here, you know, a year or two from now, and if everything goes right, where I can go, oh, this is top 10 quarterback in football. This is one of the five best arms in football. You know, that's where he is special, let alone, hey, he's another guy I look and go, tough as hell in the pocket, but a really good athlete. And again, not like he doesn't run as good as Kyler Murray or even as good as a Joe Burrow, but, you know, his ability to throw on the run or go scramble and get 8 or 10 yards on a given play, it is real. But it's the aggressive nature and the ability to make really difficult throws at an effortless level, I think, is what I like about Drew Locke a whole lot.
What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, it's really well said. You know, I think you underestimated his athletic ability. He just chooses and has not chosen, even in his college career, and not as much as he should have last year, to use it more.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always say, you know, just give it a look. And if it's not clean or whatever, if you have the ability, you're going to see that running lane or whatever and get out, and then the play will happen. So he'll learn that with time. But the one thing you bring up, we talked about him a lot about him last year. He made wild throws and this and that. But, you know, I made the one big mistake. I said, you know, I think he's a second-round guy and all this. But just because it was all over the place. And the thing, it was all over the place because, one, they just were no good. And two, the offense was no good. So all the things I preach about, I went against them. And just judge him. Don't look at the team. Don't look at the numbers. Don't look at the record and see what he is. And he showed all the traits that you talked about. And as he played this year, I was really excited to watch him come in and play. And he did everything that I thought he was capable of doing. And you kept beating on me, Christopher. I didn't give up. I stayed, you know, I said, nope. I think, maybe late first, second round. I really thought second round. But now looking back on it, I did this a long time ago, I made a mistake. He was a first-round quarterback.
Yeah, it's all right. Chris, we're even. I like Drew Locke. You like Daniel Jones. I was wrong about Daniel Jones. You were wrong about Drew Locke. It's good. We're all good. We're all in the trust tree together, so don't worry.
Yeah, people agreed with you, Phil, though, because he was the fourth quarterback taken last year behind Kyler and Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins. You know, going 27 picks past Dwayne Haskins at 42nd overall for Drew Locke, kind of like what you're talking about. The ability to take a quarterback that much later gave Denver the chance to draft Noah Fant and Dalton Reisner before their franchise quarterback.
No doubt. And, you know, you're right. So there's a support system that tells you, okay, I mean, he could explode this year. They could, especially offensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to – I wouldn't be shocked if Drew Lock threw for 4,600 yards and 30 touchdowns and, you know, 12 or 13 interceptions.
Chris, his MVP odds have gone from 150-1 before free agency and the draft to now 65-1 because a lot of people do. They like all those weapons around him. They got Judy and Hamler in the draft. They got his favorite target over there at Missouri, Albert O as well. And so – you're not alone. People think that he could shoot up, and he shot up your rankings 13 spots. He was 37th last year, so you're not alone.
Go ahead, Dad. Go ahead.
Well, no, I almost forgot what I was going to try to say. You know about Drew Lock. I did forget what I was going to say.
It's all right. Here, I got something to say, and just feed off of this because this is where to me that like Drew Lock. This is how. One, yes, I think he's special. I think my father echoes those sentiments. But this is where another way I look at it, too, and go, ooh, I think Denver thinks he's special, too. And, yes, yeah. I know they've changed offensive coordinators. But when he got put in the lineup, they weren't like, oh, let's protect him and throw a bunch of screens and throw the ball 4 yards. So the game's over. We can go, look, our rookie quarterback did pretty good. We drafted him in the second round. They kind of just unveiled it. In fact, the offense opened up when he got in there. So that tells you he's smart, and it tells you the talent was there. They went, whoa, we can do some shit with him that we haven't been able to do. Let's do it.
Yeah, you know, it comes back to this. I remember now, this is what I was going to say about last year. You would call me constantly and beat me over the head. Look at him. And I said, yeah, I did. Did you see that throw? Yeah, I saw that throw against Alabama. I know what you're talking about, whatever. And you know what it was? Again, I swear next year when I judge any players, especially quarterbacks, I'm not going to listen to one word anybody says, maybe my son. Because here's what happened with Drew Lock. The word spread, and it was big, it was loud, and it was everywhere. Well, you know, he never called plays in a huddle. He doesn't know how to do this. He got the plays in the sidelines. They never got under center. And it was on, and he's just not an alpha male, and he's on a – and he just went on. Well, okay. And then it kind of swayed my opinion a little bit. And I know better. Everybody lies about all this stuff, and they just – these cliches and phrases get attached to quarterbacks, and people just literally – base everything on those phrases. But, you know, right. And when I talk about those people, I'm talking about people like us who go on TV and talk about quarterbacks or players, and they throw this, well, he just hasn't done this, and he's a little, and I just go, I'll never do it again. I'm done. I'm going to write a note on my big board here. Don't listen to anybody when you're judging players for the draft. Just listen to yourself.
Yeah, groupthink sweeps the nation in anything, especially in sports media and a lot of times around the NFL draft with some of these prospects. He started 5 games last year. He won 4 of those. I was looking through his best game was probably versus Houston. That's a good team to have your best game against, playoff team.
Right.
They won week 14. He threw for 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. His worst game was in Kansas City, but in that game I thought it was interesting. They blitzed him 21 times in that game. More than twice as many times as he was blitzed in any other game. So they came after Drew Lock.
It was in a blizzard, if you remember, too.
I didn't remember that, no.
Yeah, the game was in a blizzard. So it wasn't a quarterback-friendly game to where you were like, oh, either him or Mahomes. Neither one was going to light up the world in that game. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Keep going.
No, yeah. So Drew Lock was 25. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Phil.
No, you know, all you had to do to me, if you watched the Houston game, that answered everything. That was it. He showed all of his skills, everything. You don't luck into games like that. He made incredible throws, ones that Christopher was talking about, off balance, just slinging it out there, everything. And I remember watching the game, and I just went, oh, my gosh, he's even better than I thought he was going to be. So that game kind of sealed it for me, that all the things you thought about him showed up. And now the question is, can they get that to be a steady process as they go along this year?
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. the few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
So I knew, Chris, that you were high on Drew Lock. I wasn't quite sure what Phil thought about him, but now hearing you both are very high on him, I'm kind of surprised he's behind the person who is next on your list, number 24 on your top 40 quarterback countdown.
Yeah, number 24, and here we go, okay? Yes, it's Jared Goff, Los Angeles Rams, all right? And listen, well, first off, the first thing I want to say is if you were just looking at that graphic right there, you know, can we put that picture back up if by any chance you got that? That to me is one of the issues right here with Jared Goff, and I'm going to talk about this more, but this, Dad, I wish you could see it. You know, he's got the ball up in a throwing position. The arm angle's broke. The ball's pointed in a weird position. And
the back of the ball is pointed up, right?
This way, it's halfway up. It's not all the way. It's kind of tilted.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I guarantee I know the picture. I've seen it many times. But go ahead.
But very, very rare. You know, very rare to see a quarterback ever in that position, okay? And listen. With Jared Goff, hey, I understand. You know, listen, he doesn't excite me nearly as much as Drew Lock. I think Drew Lock has a way higher ceiling, is way more physically gifted than Jared Goff. Yeah, I think he can do things that are just more special. But I'm going to give Jared Goff some respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. You know, that's what it means to me. The guy has won some games and went to a Super Bowl. So I can't. As much as I think the ceiling for Drew Lock is better, my premises for doing this list, again, is I'm a coach. My ass is on the hot seat. And here's my quarterback pecking order for if my first guy goes down and so on. So, yeah, I think from that standpoint, okay, I trust Jared Goff a hair more than Drew Lock. Now, with Jared Goff, hey, listen, we've seen you can win football games. The kid's not an idiot. That's for sure. He's running Sean McVay's offense and taking all the understanding and doing it at the line of scrimmage and all that stuff. He can make all the throws on the field. There is good arm strength there. I'm not going to say it's great. I'm going to say it's – and I'd like to hear what Dad says about this after. I'm going to say it's a little above average NFL starting quarterback arm strength, but not much above that. But then, you know – again, when I get into this, of course, you know I'm big into, hey, the quarterback's got to take advantage of all that's there to be had. And then when nothing's there to be had, I expect great quarterbacks to make something happen. And that, to me, is one of my biggest issues with Jared Goff. I've said it a lot through the years. You know, hey, it all looks good when Sean McVay's delivering silver platter completions and guys are wide open for 15 and 20 yards and, hey, I'm throwing a screen and Todd Gurley's not getting touched for 40 yards. Look at me. I just had a 40-yard completion. That's great. But that's the offense. And every quarterback in football can do some of that right there. That's not special. So I'm not coming away going, oh, man, if they didn't have Jared Goff, they wouldn't be able to do that. Absolutely not. Now, you know, he is tough. He's played in some big games. No doubt about that. Does he make plays from time to time? Yes, he does. Not enough for me to put him in the top 20 or really high. It's a slow delivery. It's not the most – the one thing that jumped out to me, Ahmed, really too, is he's not as accurate as sometimes I think he is. The accuracy numbers are a little misleading because of all the screens he throws and things like that. But when you start to break it down –
real quick, Chris. Yeah, I was looking at Pro Football Reference because they kind of track that. They use – I think it's Info Solutions or something along those lines where they watch the game film. Track right. On target passes. 71% of his passes they tracked as on target. That was 27th out of 32. So one of the least accurate in that category.
That's why I love you, man. You can back me up with some numbers because I'm just going off of my eyes, my feel, and my gut there. But that's the reality to me as I evaluate it. So there's that. And then, yeah, it's really – and he's below average in the pocket, Ahmed. That's the last thing I would say. And that's why he is where he is. He does not have great feel in the pocket. He's not great at moving and finding a spot that's safe to throw the ball. He's not great at throwing the ball, you know, off of different platforms or off balance and doing those type of things. So, again, Jared Goff, a good quarterback. You can certainly win with him. I know that. But this is more than that. I mean, come on. Again, stop that like, oh, you can win. He went to the Super Bowl. That's great. You know, fucking Blake Bortles is not in the NFL. He was in the AFC Championship game 3 years ago. It doesn't mean anything. So everyone's got to get over that. But that's my breakdown of Jared Goff.
All right, so Phil, so is your son being too hard on Jared Goff here? Even though he's got him ranked pretty high in his list, I was looking at, you know, he didn't have the benefit of a good rushing game last year, 26th in the NFL. He was asked to do a lot. The drop percentage actually was fairly high for the Rams. They had some drops.
But
in
that's
there.
On him too. That I didn't could get be. To that. He throws the off-target balls. He throws a lot of what I would call hard knucklers, Ahmed. The ball doesn't spin and spiral. It almost just stays in place and comes at you, and it's very hard to catch that type of football. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
See, Chris is still beating up on this guy, even I'm trying to defend him. the Rams, they did two more things here. So the offensive line play was always in question a little bit last year. Despite that, though, they had the best sack per attempt ratio in the NFL, so it didn't take a whole lot of sacks back in the pocket despite some bad offensive line play, although that might have been more in the running game than the pass protection game. But what do you think? Is your son being too hard on some of these things with Jared Goff?
Well, I don't know if he's being too hard. You know, he says it with just passion, so it kind of makes it even more. So that's fine. That's how he feels. And you know, I know he works hard at it. So, but, you know, a couple things. One, he's not good in the pocket. Yes, and I said this to my son. But they don't do a lot of pocket passing. And if you can't, you know, you can't get good at something unless you do it more than just a little. And, you know, I think he could be a really good athlete. Like when he gets out of the pocket and runs, you can see he's got decent speed and all that.
Right. Right.
I can't wait to see the new offense to see if it just, you know, makes it better, actually make it better for Jared Goff. Because, Christopher, teams caught on to the offense.
Exactly.
And they caught on to the screens and all these other things and the deep crossers. Everybody in the league is running them now. So they got to come up with more. And I didn't think they presented enough to him for him to maybe change a little bit and get better. But the throwing, he's got us. When he stripes it, I think his arm is strong. You know, when he throws it clean and it's a spiral, he can make some great throws. But the problem is, the ball does get away from him every now and then. And the NFL, if you lose, as I say all the time, if you lose control of the ball three or four times a game, that is big-time trouble. Now, you might not make the greatest decisions, but you got to be able to throw the ball and get it really close to where you want the ball to go. Even though it might be the wrong decision, you still got to be able to do that. And a great example of it is, in the Super Bowl, back of the end zone, Brandon Cooks, Jared
right.
Goff sees him late. He goes to throw it, and like he said, his arm got in some bad spots, and he didn't connect it the way he usually does. And what happened? The ball floated, took forever to get there, and it got knocked down. So that's one thing I do see in his throwing motion. And listen, it's always a pet peeve of mine, and I said to you guys, I'm going to say it one more time. Tom Brady throws a lot during the offseason, works on his craft, wants to get better, thinks about it. He just doesn't throw to throw. He's thinking about it. And, you know, we saw the great change in Aaron Rodgers from that stupid college motion he had, and he adapted because he saw Brett Favre, figured it out, and we see greatness from him. Tony Romo, when he was playing with the Cowboys, had a great motion, really never lost control of the ball, and we would talk during the offseason and during the season and how he was always thinking and working on just making sure the release and how he got to where he wanted the ball to go, he was working on it. So that's what great throwers do. You know, some are just so gifted like Aaron Rodgers, it doesn't matter. He can pick it up without throwing one all offseason and do it. But his stuff is great. But the rest of them and young quarterbacks, what does Steph Curry do during the offseason to get better?
Yeah,
he shoots
threes. You're right.
He shoots. And quarterbacks, I love it when they say, well, I don't throw much. I just throw a couple days, you know. And I just go, well, that you're stupid. It's crazy. You to get better at throwing, you've got to throw. And
right.
Because there's innate feels about it. You know, in other words, just you can't teach it. You learn it through just repetition and repetition of getting great feel for the ball, learning to manipulate it however you have to. You heard Christopher say that. That is one thing that Jared Goff does not do. He's not a great off-balance thrower. You know, plant your foot, throw it across the field, stuff like that. And I really disagree with this. You can't change a quarterback's motion. Please shut up, because you're wrong. I know they can. I've seen them do it, and I see it all the time. Sometimes it's very small, and you don't recognize it. I do, and I know it makes a difference in what they do. Last thing, I'll just say this real quick. What happened to Baker Mayfield last year throwing the ball? He's got a really good arm, and he can throw it, and he can pass it. But Baker Mayfield, for some reason, thought he was Nolan Ryan. And, hell, there comes a guy across the field. He's wide open. He's trying to throw it 100 miles an hour. And, when you know, the harder he was trying, he did the same thing. And they almost always, well, not almost, I think every time I saw him, if it was a bad throw, it was an overthrow. And that came from trying to throw it too hard, and it leads to a mistake because the connections don't stay the way they should. So,
yeah,
that's all I'll say.
No, well said, well said. Yeah. Just going to say, well said by Dad. And, you know, I know I've talked about this and we've talked about this before, but it's still worth saying again. You know, Dad's right. You know, throwers, you can fix thrower. Natural throwers can be fixed. Okay. Where we got into this narrative is of, oh, we can never change this guy once he throws that way. You know, those are conversations that we've had throughout our history of football with guys who aren't natural throwers, like Tim Tebow or Blake Bortles. I'm sorry to go to Blake Bortles again here, but, you know, those are the things I heard about them. I know it never fails, but those are the things you hear about them. And I would just sit here and tell most people, go, yeah, you can't fix them because they're not really natural, what we would call naturally gifted throwers. Can you just pick up any object and let it go? Wiffle ball, rock, baseball, Nerf football, real football, basketball, whatever it was, Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers can throw whatever that damn object is you put in their hand, and you're going to go, whoa, okay? Unnatural throwers, I don't give a crap if Phil Simms teaches them or, you know, anybody else out there. There's going to be a limited ceiling as far as how much they can adjust, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You agree with that, Dad? Am I right there?
Yes, you do. Ahmed, let me say this. No, and I've said this to you before, but I'll say it again anyway. Nobody knows more about the 100 meters than me. I train for it better than anybody. I work harder at it. I live the life. I get down that stance, the gun goes off, my ass is coming in last. Okay? So all that means that, and the thing about throwing, here's what gets me. Yeah, they don't change their motions, because who's going to teach them? Who's going to teach them? Tell me. You know, that's the problem. Oh, you can't change the motion. Yeah, because you don't know how to teach them to do it. That's
right.
The problem. And
right.
You could take many of these guys and tweak them a little. Is Johnny Parker, our strength coach for the New York Giants for many years, I said to him once, what do you think, would it really make Lawrence Taylor any better if he really trained and stayed in shape and did all that? And he goes, he's Southern from Mississippi, goes, Bill, all I can say is this. If the sun was 1 degree closer to Earth, Earth would explode. And I said, okay, I got it. And it was it. And so, you know, just think of Lawrence Taylor. What he was great. But what would he have been if he took care of himself, still had the same mentality, and trained to be better? My God, he would be the greatest player that ever stepped on the field in the NFL.
Yeah. Still a lot of people hoping that Jared Goff can get better, because they'll always have that. Not the scarlet letter, but it's a scarlet number, $134 million, $110 guaranteed. He's talked about perhaps restructuring that contract to help him fit some more players under the salary cap, but that's a discussion that we've had, Chris, with a lot of quarterbacks. Can you win with a quarterback making that much money? And oftentimes it's the talk of even with an elite quarterback, let alone a quarterback that's on the level of Jared Goff, making that much money makes it that much tougher.
Yeah, well, yeah. Go ahead, Dad. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to say, Ahmed, what is it about every quarterback's contract that comes up? It has to be the biggest one. Like, what we just said, it was $34 million, so my guy's got to get at least $35 million. I don't get that. I mean, you know,
if I was an agent, I would say that. If I was a sports agent, that would be my line.
Well, yeah, that's your line. But I just don't understand it. Why every team thinks, oh, well, okay, his contract's up. We're going to make the highest paid guy out. Boy, excuse me, the highest paid guy out there. I just don't understand that logic. And
no.
I think sooner or later, somebody's going to balk.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to go, somebody's going to balk. Sooner or later, one NFL team's going to go, you know what? We're going to save that $38 million we're going to pay you, and we're going to get this other guy, and it's not. And we're going to add more players because we're not paying you $38 million. I don't know.
Right.
I'm not against the quarterbacks making the money. I'm not. But I don't understand why every contract has to be the biggest one compared to the one that was just done.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you can tell that's
a fear. Musical chairs
there.
That you'll be left. Yeah, you're both going to say the same thing.
Oh, you
right
talk
there.
About that too, Christopher? Yeah. Well,
I mean, yeah. It just to me right now, it should be okay. This is what Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers make, and nobody makes more until you show me that you're better than them. And the only people we could talk about maybe being better than them right now are, you know, maybe a Deshaun Watson and of course Patrick Mahomes. Okay, that's fine. They've earned that. But you're right. I don't get it. You know, I don't get teams. I mean, the Rams negotiated against themselves on a quarterback that, you know, again, as I see, is number 24 in football. And I don't think anybody in football, just so we can clarify this, I mean, nobody thinks Jared Goff is a top 10 quarterback. Nobody. I just want to clarify that. And I know I've been very passionate about the Jared Goff thing and this whole thing here, too. And it's not personal to Jared Goff. I like Jared Goff. I mean, I think he knows some of the things I've said about him. I don't think he likes me very much, okay? But I do respect him, and I do think he's tough, and I do think he loves football. I'm passionate about this one because I know the Twitterverse and everybody else is going to try to shit on me, and that's why I probably came out with a little more passion here, Ahmed. That might have got mistaken for Jared Goff hate.
Yeah,
and I don't hate anybody.
You're saying good things, and I'll tell you what, just watching him on the field and all that, he comes across great. I'm sure his teammates really like him. You know, he's not a celebrity. Look at me. I'm, you know, he really,
right.
You know, I can tell he loves his job. I can tell he loves football. I do. And I think it's a big year for him, and the fact that we've heard all this and what Sean McVay going to do, and really, you know, I know we said it was easy, but I don't know if it was easy for him last year and things like that. And just,
no.
You know, I don't know. So I root for him. I do. But, you know, there's the things that we talk about, Christopher and I, Ahmed, I think they're true. And I'm always very careful when I talk about quarterbacks to be, you know, true to them and either explain and let them know that I know, you know, I'm just not making it up. I'm not just sitting there giving an opinion. I do it from the facts that I see as I watch, not some games. I watch every game of his during the year. So, you know, and he has moments where I just go, damn, that was really good. And so I'd like just to see more of those moments. I think Christopher made it really perfectly clear. Last thing is that, you know, to be a great NFL quarterback, there just comes to a point we just take for granted the really good plays. Just take for granted. And that's when we take those for granted, then you know you're good. That's
right.
You know, we just see Mahomes make the throw in the Super Bowl, 14 yards back from the line of scrimmage, getting ready to get hit, and he throws a whatever completion to the wide receiver, Tyreek Hill. And we take that for granted because he's done it so much and so consistently that we just go, we expect it now. When he doesn't do it, we're like, Christopher, you were watching the game with me, right?
Yeah,
and then
no.
We were going, oh, you weren't with me. I forgot. But yeah. I'm going, man, Mahomes, you know, he's just not quite on like he usually is, you know. And I, of course, when I watched the game on tape, I understood why, because he was under great pressure and they were killing him and whatever. But, you know, I had a different perspective once I watched it a second time. But, you know, we just take for granted that he's going to be great every time he goes out there.
No doubt. And Ahmed, it speaks to the bigger thing of there's a lot of good damn quarterbacks in football right now. Like, sure. To what Dad was talking about the contracts right now, you know, a second ago. I mean, we got 8 starting quarterbacks going into the 2020 season who have been drafted in the last 2 drafts. So that just tells you what's coming into the league right now, the talent that's already in the league, some of the old-timers that are still playing at a high level, Brady, Breeze, Big Ben, Phillip Rivers. So there ain't a quarterback problem in the NFL right now. You can win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. That's obvious. I'm not even trying to deny that. You can do it. I'm just saying he's not as good as the 23 guys I got in front of him.
And there have been a handful of Cal quarterbacks that have made it to the Super Bowl, and producer Pete wanted me to hit you guys with a trivia question here. Cal has produced 5 quarterbacks who have started a Super Bowl, most of any college. Can you name them? How many of the 5 can you name?
Wow. Oh my God. It's Joe Capp.
Oh, Joe Capp. Good one, Dad.
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff.
Yep, that's easy. I was thinking of Steve Barkowski, never made it. Man, could he throw a ball?
Man, I know. I'm stuck here. Hold on a second. Who am I missing? Are we missing somebody from the old days here?
Yeah, 2.
It's 2. They're both older quarterbacks?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm not
that
get
familiar
it.
With their games.
I know. Hold on. Just give me a few more seconds here. I'm just trying to think of quarterbacks, and they played in the Super Bowl. Who the hell am I missing in this conversation? I'm trying to go through the 70s and Bradshaw and Stabler and Staubach. No. Greasy, no. I mean, wow.
There was one of these quarterbacks, producer Pete says, started a Super Bowl for 2 different teams. So one of these remaining 2 that you haven't thought of started for 2 different teams.
Started
I don't
for
even know
two
which
different
one.
Teams in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Not Craig Morton.
I know. I was about to say Craig Morton, too.
Craig Morton. Craig Morton.
Craig Morton.
Oh,
was
Craig Morton is correct.
That is correct.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to say, you know, Craig Morton. I was going to go through all these other guys. And then I was getting ready to say, oh, Norris Weiss. I don't know where he went to college because I knew he played in the game. But you said started Super Bowl games.
And then the final one, I'll give you the first name, Vince.
Vince Ferragamo.
Vince Ferragamo, yeah.
The Rams,
oh my God.
Also played at Nebraska. Yeah. Also played at Nebraska, so that's what
played Nebraska
that
too. He was at Cal with Joe Roth, Vince Ferragamo, I think Steve Bartkowski, and a guy that I played with the Giants, Fred Bazzana, were all on the same roster, if I'm not mistaken. And I just went, how would you like to go to practice and see those? Joe Roth was going to be the first pick of the draft. And he got cancer and, of course, passed away. But, what a group.
They were a combined 1-5 in the Super Bowl. So they got there, but Cal has not had a whole lot of success.
But, Aaron Rodgers, he got them a win.
Saved them. Phil, you got time for one more? We're going to reveal one more on the top.
Let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. Number 23, Chris.
Sam Darnold, New York Jets, right? Sam Darnold. Hey, you know, do I still have a few questions about Sam Darnold? Certainly. I mean, we haven't seen him play a full 16-game season yet. But I saw improvements from year 1 to year 2 with Sam Darnold in some areas that I wanted to see improvement. One of my issues with Sam Darnold going into the 2019 season was – I thought he was a below average down the field thrower. And when I say down the field, I mean like, you know, anything above 18 yards, 20 yards, anything like that. I didn't love that. He was better last year. I don't know what the stats and numbers say, but that's what my eyes told me. And then the other things about Sam Darnold that are positive, okay? He's got a very quick release. You talk about getting the ball out of your hand in a hurry in a short passing game, screens. I mean, he can get it out of his hand about as good as anybody in the NFL. Not named maybe Aaron Rodgers as far as quickness of throwing it. Then I get into 2 other things that really jump out to me, what I like about Sam Darnold. He is phenomenal in the pocket. I mean, a master Jedi like in the pocket. He really is. He's got phenomenal feet. He's got great feel. He's one of those guys that can move around the pocket. And, like, it looks like he's looking at the rush the way he's avoiding these guys, but yet he can look downfield and still evaluate his receivers and the coverage and still make throws that way, let alone he is a phenomenal, phenomenal intermediate passer of the football. Anything between 5 and 15 yards, it is freaking bullseye, like 95% of the time. And I think that's what I really like about Sam Darnold. So there's a lot of potential there. It's a big year for him and the Jets for sure. I know we don't know maybe completely what he is yet because he hasn't played that 16-game season, but I think it's going in the right direction. I'm a big fan of Sam Darnold.
What do you think, Phil?
Well, that was well said. I'll just say this. He does have great feet in the pocket, and it just kind of shows you if you go to the right school and you got talent as a quarterback and they let you exploit that talent, then you can bring it to the NFL, and that's what's great. You know, Joe Burrow got to do it. Sam Darnold got to do it at USC, moved around all the time, and we looked at it kind of as a negative, where now I go, it's really helped him, because we know pro football, moving in the pocket and buying time is about as important as throwing or anything else. So
right. He
throws a great football. It's always got the right pace on it. He always throws beautiful spirals, easy to catch. You said it, he is a machine, throwing from 15 yards and under. I like the fact that he moves around. And the other thing is, too, even though you don't see him talk and all that, I just think he's got a great presence on the field as a quarterback. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm a little biased because he's local, but I don't think it is. But he just there's something about him. I think players will gravitate towards him. They'll let him lead them. And, you know, he has all that stuff that you want. It's kind of easy for him. And he's quiet, but his body actions on the field and on the sidelines, even though he's not talking sometimes, don't say that.
Very real.
And I really watched it close. And, you know, of course, I talked to a lot of people that know more about him. And everything I've just said, they just go, absolutely. And I think the Jets are sitting there now going, man, do we have a quarterback roster? You know, if Joe Flacco gets healthy, he's backing up.
Right.
They got Morgan from FIU. Now, instead of everything blowing up when he gets hurt, which it did last year especially, and at least they got somebody capable that can come in for a while and duplicate what he's going to be doing for the team.
Yeah.
I like him a lot.
Steps up.
So,
yeah. Chris, he took some steps up. They won 3 more games than they did the previous year in 2019. His completion percentage went up 4%, yards up, touchdowns up, interceptions up. A lot of people in the media like to talk about him and talk him up right now. It seems like his stock is rising. Dan Orlovsky over at ESPN created some waves when he said any quarterback taken over the last 3 years, he would take this guy for the next 10 into the future. And so that's over a guy like Lamar Jackson. Clearly, you do not agree with him there.
No, I do
Colin
not.
Cowherd, you hear him talk all the time. He said he'd take Sam Darnold over Dak. So I am a little curious. You know, you got him at 23. You're very positive about him. He did drop one spot from your rankings last year. So I'm curious what the downside concerns you have with Sam Darnold are.
Well, I don't know if there's enough of a sample size yet for me to sit out there and just go, oh, okay, he's top 10. That's no doubt about it. You know, I don't know if there is. And listen, part of that's the Jets, too. It hasn't been the greatest support system. It's not going to look perfect for Sam Darnold all the time. You know, it's, hey, Robbie Anderson was the only go-to guy he had. They had no running game. Le'Veon Bell struggled. Offensive line wasn't great. You know, I like the Adam Gase offense. I don't love it. I think that's another area of growth in that. But, you know, again, it's not necessarily I don't look at the year before and go, oh, I had him here this year. And now this next year, I got to move him up just a little bit. No, I don't. Because some other guys just might have moved up and played really awesome to where, Sam Darnold was better this year than year one. There are just some other guys that also impressed me as much or more. You know, Sam Darnold is the type of guy where, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we were sitting here next year and he was in my top 10. I wouldn't be. But I think the biggest thing with Sam Darnold to me, I guess the one thing I would like to see more is those in the pocket, game-changing, big-time type throws, okay? Like, to me, where a guy like, okay, let's just say Drew Lock, who we talked about a little earlier, you know, Drew Lock and the Denver Broncos, he's going to make some throws every game in the pocket that are going to change field position, change the flow of the football game, along with the offense is going to be able to call certain plays with him because of his ability to throw big time strikes from the pocket down the field. That to me is just one area where Sam Darnold, I look at and could get better. You know, hey, whether that's like a 25-yard missile down the right sideline in between a cover two corner and a safety, but those type of things. That's the one area I look at a Sam Darnold and go, ooh, I like everything about him. Dad talked about him, you know, the aura or presence he has. It's very real. I've been around all these guys, really. And I've been around Sam Darnold a lot. It's a quiet confidence about him. He has a presence as soon as he walks in the room. You know he's smart. You can see he's kind of evaluating everybody. If you say something stupid, he's very quick on his toes and will make fun of that right away, which I love, okay? But I think that's the thing that maybe bothers me about his play, maybe more than anything, if there was a negative there. Dad, you got a negative on him that jumps out to you?
You know, only I guess the negative is I now hope we get a chance to see even more of him because the talent is better. They've got the offensive line hopefully straightened out. It could be their line actually could turn out to be pretty better than just okay. It could be pretty good. And see if Le'Veon Bell comes back in super shape and football shape to be a better part of the football team. But he's got more targets to throw to. And I expect the offense to be more diverse than it was in years past. The last, you know, how many years? I'm sitting there, I got Adam Gase.
This will be
his third year coming up.
Yes, third year, right.
Yeah, isn't that terrible? It goes so quick. But, yeah, I expect more. But, yes, I want to see him truly, you know, be that more dynamic guy and really kind of dominate the team a little more. I want to see the game. I want to see the team flow through Sam Darnold.
Right.
We're going to win and lose because our quarterback is the man, and we're going to, when in doubt, we're going to play around him.
That's what it is, Ahmed. Dad really hit it. That's really what it is. And that's probably why he's 23 because, you know, I think there's other quarterbacks we're going to get to a little bit on this list where, yeah, the game is played through them, and it's not played through Sam Darnold quite yet. There's still a little bit of a, oh, he's young, we're going to protect him, and you're right. This is the year that I think Dad hit it. They got to let it go and let everything flow from him. And, hey, there's a reason they picked him number three and let him carry the squad from there.
Giving him some support in the draft, too. Mekhi Becton will help on the offensive line. Denzel Mims may help.
Denzel Mims, yeah.
I know we've been going long when Chris is doing the AirPod dance with his AirPods here and switching them in and out. I don't know how many you have over there. But before we go, we got the trivia question for Big Phil. You ready? You ready, Big Phil? Our last thing?
I'm ready.
So Chris did Quarterback Jeopardy, does that with Paulie B. And a couple weeks ago, he went 4 for 5. It was Phil Sims trivia, but he missed one. And I'm going to give you the question. It was the $300 question. We'll see if you can get it about your own life. Phil was the question.
I don't like my chances, but go ahead.
You threw for a career best 513 yards in an October of 85 loss at Cincinnati. Which of your receivers had the most yards that day?
Oh, boy, Mark Bavall caught a couple big ones. Bobby Johnson did. I'm going to say Bobby Johnson.
It is not Mark Bavaro.
Oh, Bavaro was too obvious. I said it. One of my greatest throws as a quarterback in the NFL, I threw a corner route for about a 25 or 30-yard gain to him. I threw it airborne. I was flying through the air. I got hit so hard, I went and I threw a strike to him. I don't know how I did it and everything. But I can remember, that's the one play I remember. We were going to the left on TV, right to left, and somewhere around midfield I made this throw. I got crushed and threw it. And, of course, Mark, it didn't matter if he was covered or not. Just the whole motto was when Bavaro's in the action, throw it to him. If he's covered, he's open. Throw it to him. So, dang, I can't believe I missed it. But Bobby Johnson, I just remember him catching a couple of big end cuts, I thought. And I thought it's got to be a trick question. So, okay.
Right. That's what I thought, too. That's why I got it wrong. I was like, oh, Bavaro was a rookie that year. I'm not so sure he would have got the ball that many times. I think I said Zeke Mowat or I don't know what I said. Zeke Mowat or Lionel Manuel. Either way, I was wrong. So it makes me feel better. You were wrong about your own life, though. That's good.
Well, you know, Boomer Esiason always brings it up that we lost and this, that to him. And I said, Boomer, I don't care. I threw for 513, so who cares? And, you know, it's just, you know, you get on the bus, you go, well, we lost, but damn, we threw the ball well. I did throw an interception for a touchdown, too, which wasn't great. But
Yeah.
But that's how I feel when we back. And then I lost another time to Boomer down in Cincinnati. He didn't do crap. I had a big game, 300 yards, all this other stuff. We still lost, and so I just throw it into his face like, hey, Boomer, sometimes, you know.
Damn, Dab, are you 0-3 against Boomer? Shit.
Yeah, I know it was. He loves that. He loves it. Yeah, he was with the Jets. They beat us in a low-scoring game in 1993, I think. Would that be?
Yeah, that hurt. I remember.
Yeah, shoot. Should have beat them. We were better than they were, but
yeah. Rainy day, and I had to go hear all the shit at school from the Jets fans that they beat the Giants. It pissed me off.
Well, anytime that comes up, just go. Just all you got to just say is, oh yeah. When's the last time the Jets won the Super Bowl?
Oh, okay. Oh, shots fired by Big Bill. Shots fired.
Yeah.
The ultimate trump card. You can't top that.
What's that
great
again?
Talking to you, Phil. I said the ultimate trump card. You can't top Super Bowls. You just go to that, and there's no comeback from.
Yeah, that's easy out. I know. I never do it to people, but I mean, not to players, but I can do it to other people. So, but look, great being on here today with you guys. A lot of fun. Appreciate it, and I'm sure next Thursday morning I'll get a call from my son. You're going to be on, aren't you?
Not, you know it.
Will you come
it's
on?
Coming.
It's you're going to be on, right? So, I don't know where I went wrong, but, you know, hey, hindsight, we're all geniuses after the fact, so I just live with it. I raised him, so I got to live with it.
Yeah, your kids need you, especially this kid. So
thanks Dad. All right, you're the man.
Y'all have a great day. Thanks.
You too. All right, that was good.
We got to hear all of the both Sims' reactions to all four of the quarterbacks in the countdown today. I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised a little bit. I thought Darnold would be higher. I thought Goff would be lower, and I thought Locke might be a little higher. I'm surprised with your rankings today.
Well, you know that I went back and forth with Locke and Goff. You know that to pull the curtain back. That was one of the closer races in this whole. I got a few notes next to that on my list that I have in my notebook there because I had a hard time figuring that on the go the first time around. And yeah, as much I like Sam Darnold, but you're going to see, you know, as we crack down this list, you're going to go, well, okay, well, I can understand that guy being in front of Sam Darnold. It's just there's a lot of good damn quarterbacks in football right now. And a lot of the quarterbacks that are somewhere, let's just say the ones we hit today, you know, 10 through, what was it, 26? I mean – I know we hit 26 through 23 today, but I'm just saying 10 through 26, it's not a huge gap between guys we're talking about here. And a lot of these guys, they have a good year and improve on some things. I look at them and go, oh, they have potential to be top 10 quarterbacks. And some of them have potential to be top 5 quarterbacks. They really do. So it's a good thing for our sport. We got a lot of gunslingers out there. We got a lot of good quarterbacks. And it's what, of course, drives the sport and makes it fun for guys like me and you to have lots of things to talk about.
Getting close to the top 20. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Chris. Oh, baby. All right. Good stuff today, dude. Good podcast. That's it for Chris Sims Unbuttoned. I'm Ed Farid. I love you. I'll see
you too,
next
man.
Week. Great job driving the ship today. Everybody be good out there. Have a good weekend. Hey, let's not forget social distancing. It's still a thing. All right, let's not totally forget.
Sure?
As Ahmed coughs. Whoa, get away from me. Okay?
That was unprompted. Oh, my God.
Hey, let's continue to fight the good fight for humanity and care about all and treat everybody as equal. That's the last thing I got to say. Peace out, everybody. Be good. You the man, Ahmed. Talk to you.
You too, Chris.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.